Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the rail city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talked to Barb Hale and Teresa McKeeman. They are two of the organizers of the Canadian Federation of University Women, or the CFUW, who are themselves one of the organizers of the Guelph Wellington Women's Campaign School. Taking place this weekend, the Campaign School is an opportunity to give women thinking about running for office the information they need to start their journey to being a politician, and given the current affairs, can you think of a better priority? Getting more women in politics is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, according to the United Nations, a government needs a minimum makeup of 30% women in order to sufficiently reflect women's concerns. Of course, women make up about 52% of the general population, but considering that women in Canada make up only 18% of the mayors, 28% of the city councillors, 29% of provincial and territorial legislatures, and 29% of the members of parliament, I think it's safe to say we still have a long way to go. In Guelph, though, we have hit the benchmark, with 4 out of 13 members of our city council being women. We've achieved that 30% red line to adequately reflect women. We've done better, of course. It wasn't too long ago that more than half of council was women, and no matter how you feel about the present group of city councillors, I think we all might be agreed that a little more representation is a good thing. But how do we get there? Well, the CFUW thinks that a good start is the Guelph Wellington Women's Campaign School. The aim of the school is to give prospective female candidates and their supporters the assistance they need to begin the process of running for city council or school board trustee later this year. Ward 3 councillor June Hoffman is the host for the day-long school, during which participants will learn about the paperwork involved, campaign strategy, and how to manage their ideas into communications plans. The event is sold out, but perhaps that's an indication of just how eager some women are, perhaps in the spirit of the moment, to test themselves at the ballot box. But before all that, we take a moment to talk to Barb Hale and Teresa McKeeman, who are both executive members of the CFUW. The Federation is, of course, concerned with the advancement of women from all walks of life and in all areas of life, but this week on the Guelph Politicast, we talk about politics, obviously. We talk about the goal of the campaign school, the challenges that women face on the campaign trail, what they hope these future candidates take away from the training, and whether we are going to see an explosion of women candidates in Canada, similar to what's been happening in the United States, where 25,000 women have asked for help from Emily's List, an organization that supports women running for office in the U.S., and that's been an increase since Donald Trump's presidential victory in 2016. Might we see a similar reflex after Patrick Brown? Time will tell. In the meantime, I caught up with Barb Hale and Teresa McKeeman last week in studio.
My name is Barb Hale, and I'm president this year of CFUW Guelph. That's the Canadian Federation of University Women.
And I'm Teresa McKeeman. I'm a member of CFUW Guelph, and I am on the advocacy committee and very involved in organizing this campaign school for women.
And where did this idea, and I'll start with you, Teresa, where did the idea come from? Because we are seeing this is, you know, outside of the immediate social issues and what's going on at Queen's Park and what's going on in Hollywood and other places. But even before that, Emily's List in the States was talking about seeing a boom in women running for office, like in the thousands. It's not just, you know, a few thousand, thousands, tens of thousands of women running for office. So the idea for this, did this come from a direct response that a lot of women are interested in running this year? Or is this also kind of part recruitment, trying to invite women to take more of an active role?
Right. Well, it's a bit of both, but really we our club got involved during the last municipal election when we started hearing from female candidates that the personal attacks were really draining their energy and taking away from being able to talk about the issues. And we heard women say, well, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. Right. I'm not sure I want to run. And given that we know that, you know, women are 52% of the population, but, you know, much smaller numbers on municipal council, we thought we should do something about this. And we were actually challenged by those female politicians to get out there and support women mm-hmm. so that they would run.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what kind of form that harassment takes? I mean, I heard stories. Mm-hmm. And I think I was at the Green Party convention a couple of weeks ago, and Sean Yeo, who is Mike Schreiner's campaign manager, was Karen Farbridge's campaign manager, yes. said that he experienced some things running her campaign as well.
Yes.
But can you talk about, you know, any specific, like not in terms of specific candidates, but
right.
like in specific tactics
yeah.
that
yeah.
these candidates face?
Yeah. Well, you know, not being a candidate, you know, these things didn't happen to me personally, but certainly we heard that online women were certainly being attacked. And again, for things like their looks, for, you know, just being female. And then I think the thing that really sort of catapulted us into doing something was there was a particularly egregious store display targeting Karen Farbridge that could be interpreted in a very sexual way that was really, really inappropriate. And it just sort of galvanized a lot of our members who just said, This is wrong. You know, we need to stand up and say something.
Mm-hmm. And Barb, since you are the one, the head of the membership this year, first of all, if you could tell us a bit about the CFUW and then how this organization has become the platform from which women are locally are tackling the issue this time.
Okay, thank you. Well, CFUW is a group of about 180 women, and we're all on the shared value of education and are specifically using education to improve the lives of girls and women. And so we have a lot of different things we do. We have scholarships, we have an advocacy committee, and we have a speaker series that educates our membership as to a lot of the issues and also community things. We also have a goal of helping women connect and we learn from each other, and everybody is so diverse in their interests, you know, in the community projects, whether it's the new library or this kind of project. So it's just a coming together of women to better our community.
Mm-hmm. I imagine You mentioned networking in particular, and we know that, or becoming more aware that it's not about what you know, it's who you know, and that is especially difficult, I think, if, you know, you tell me, I'm not a woman, but, you know, if you're a woman and you're talking about getting involved in certain fields, like politics, which tend to be male-dominated, that there's, you know, a very specific need that needs to be filled in terms of helping women, helping other women get ahead in certain areas.
Well, I think that's true. Certainly there's a shared experience that we all have, although in the fall we ran a panel of women candidates, people that have had leadership role in politics. And in the hall there were a lot of men out there too mm-hmm. who wanted to be part of making things happen. So, so a women's group is unique, yes, but we need support from men as well to accomplish our goals.
Right, and the training that is taking place on the weekend is, it's not women only. You allies who are men who plan on working on campaigns are invited to take part as well.
Correct. We are hoping to support women who want to run, of course. But the people who are coming are not only women who are interested in becoming candidates, but people who want to support their campaigns. And you're right, that is open to men and women,
mm-hmm.
and basically all genders.
Let me ask you this a bit more generally. Do you think there's, I mean, we talk about the harassment, obviously, but in terms of other barriers that stop women from
right.
getting involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way, you know, I'm thinking of I don't think anyone stops and questions the motives of a man who wants to run for any office, but that doesn't seem to occur for women. And I wonder, does that have an effect, like, you know, the appearance of a woman seeking power? Is that, like, what kind of barrier does that overcome? Does that still create stigma?
Yeah, I think not so much women seeking power anymore. I think that that is changing. Mm-hmm. But definitely women do have some unique barriers. Women do tend to feel that they have to be almost perfect in order to run. There is a societal stereotype, I think, that looks at women and is a little more brutal in terms of if they make a mistake, it's, you know, pointed out. So women think they have to be even better than men, that they have to work harder, that they have to prove themselves. So, you know, it's a bit of a confidence thing for women.
And I imagine this is true in just about any sectors that you're dealing with as well, that for a woman, you have to work just as hard to, or harder to make, you know, to make, to prove you are supposed to be there, as it were.
Yes, I find I work as a career practitioner, or I used to, and if a job's posted and a man has most of the criteria that's named, they'll apply. But a woman, you'll find they have all the criteria in spades before they would even consider applying. So there's just seems to be a little more boldness there,
right?
And or a little more reluctance to step forward that we find in women.
So how much of this is about, you know, trying to instill boldness? Because I think there are probably several women, hundreds of women out there who have ideas and are looking to contribute. And certainly there's a lot of community involvement. But what's like the, I guess, the X factor? No pun intended.
Yeah. you know, I think that women perhaps are not asked as often to run. So that's one of the things that we're wanting to do, is that they have different networks than men tend to have. And so they need to be asked. They need to be told you can do it. And they need to be told there'll be people there to support you if you do it.
It's interesting, too, and again, I'm thinking back to the Green Party convention. It was here in Guelph, but one of the speakers said, you know, in lieu of trying to build that support you're talking about, when we talk about leadership, the picture in our heads, whether that's a conscious or subconscious thing, is usually a white man. And it's, you know, that's not an easy thing to get over, because it's sort of been... It's sort of like a genetic muscle in our brains, that when you hear leadership, we think of a white, older white man, typically.
Yeah, and politics does still tend to be a white male world. And so women don't have as many role models. They don't have as many people who can mentor them. And women are also judged, women of a certain age, if they have a family, they're judged on, why are you running? You know, how are you going to manage your family and, you know, your job? Men are not asked that question.
It's really only two generations ago that it was really frowned upon in society if women had a job outside of the home. So we're not that far out of the gate.
That's so true, because... on one of my other shows, we review movies, and we did The Post a couple of weeks ago, and there's a scene in The Post where Katharine Graham, publisher of The Washington Post, is hosting a dinner party, and this is like 1971 or two, but there's a point where the dinner party where the men go one way, have their brandy and cigars, and talk about the issues of the day, and the women go the other, and of course, because Kat Graham was a woman, she goes into the parlor, and it's like, well, if you're having a discussion about politics and power, wouldn't you want the publisher of the Washington Post in the room, no matter what outfit they had on? It's strange, and that again, that was a couple of generations ago, that we still have that hump, whether it's intentional or not, that women are trying to overcome. I want to talk about Guelph specifically too, because I did note on the page for this event that the goal is to reach 30% a very modest goal,
right,
of female representation in government. In Canada-wide, that's 18% now. But in Guelph, we are at least meeting that plateau. We are at 30% female representation on council.
We are in Guelph. We have lost ground.
Yes,
from
we
the
have.
Last
yeah,
election.
That was where I was going to go next.
So 30% is actually a minimum for women's voices to be heard, but it's not representative of the population of females in the area. And it's much worse for Wellington County Council, where one of 15 councillors is a female. So. Yeah, it's still a big problem, you know, and the other thing that we know is that when you already have more males, we know that incumbents have an advantage.
Right.
So we actually need many more women to run in order to start to catch up, because since incumbents tend to win and there tend to be more male incumbents, we need even more women to be running.
Is there a way to bring, you know, some of the things the group itself has learned? Because, again, when we're talking about something like council, there's a fairly easy mechanism to create change, which is the ballot box every 4 years. But for something like, you know, working in private sectors or even for institutions like the University of Guelph, you know, there's controls and systems and, things like seniority and other things that control how fast a woman can move up the ranks, too. So is there any kind of carryover there in terms of strategies and how to help women go further in politics that we can take from other work the CFUW does?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I do think that something that has to change is just the whole political environment. Because the one thing that we know is that women prefer to work in a cooperative and a collaborative way.
Right.
And politics is not about that. It's about winner take all. And so that kind of environment is not very attractive for women. And perhaps it's not even a very effective way to problem solve. I mean, we've got huge problems in this world. Our city is growing at a very fast pace. We've got a lot of issues that we need to work on. We need diversity of opinion, but we need to work in a collaborative way to find the answers to those things. And I think if we can change the way councils operate, you know, good codes of conduct and making sure that they're adhered to, it will become more attractive to women if they feel that they can go in there and compete and say what they need to say without being attacked.
Right.
From the club's perspective, we have committees that deal with the issues that they, you know, want to take on. So the advocacy committee has many issues they take on. But from an organizational point of view, I think that one of the things that CFUW has done is open itself up to women of all educational levels. So the name is almost a misnomer, because it's Canadian Federation of University Women, but you no longer have to have a university degree to be part of our group. And I think that breaking down that barrier is really important, because what's important is that you value education and you see it as a vehicle to improve the lives of others, both yourself being educated and helping others achieve education.
Because that's always the goal, right? Is to, you know, the next generation coming up, get them a little bit further. Speaking of the past, Guelph has, you know, I think we can pride ourselves on being a little bit ahead of the curve on this. One of the posters they had downtown celebrating 190 years of Guelph history is that in the year 2000 we had a female mayor, MPP, and MP. And I'm thinking of 2006, when we had 7 out of 13 around the horseshoe were women too. And, you know, that's changed in the years since. But I'm wondering, was there something in the air in Guelph that, you know, that we took that giant leap, or is that just, was that like a sudden hiccup of progressiveness and we've gone back to quote unquote normal in the years since?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't really know, but you know what? Lots has changed in the world since that time. I mean, we only have to look south of the border to see what's happening there.
What happened south of the border? I'm just messing with
yes,
you.
Yes, I know. Yeah, so I don't know. It's almost like we are taking sort of a step backwards, perhaps. Mm. And I guess for me, I'm kind of hopeful that this step backwards is actually going to bring out the voices that need to come out and that we'll actually keep moving forward. But we just have to, yeah, sometimes you have to go through these tough times and really examine you know, what you want before you get to the place you need to be.
Very true.
I think when I moved to Guelph, I moved about 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that appealed to me was the fact that there was a university. It's a small town, relatively, but there's a university, and with that comes a certain open-mindedness. Mm. And small L liberalism, I think.
Sure.
And so I think that has an effect on Guelph and how it conducts itself as a community.
Mm. You did. You brought up our orange-colored friends south of the border. I think that also plays into the things that have gone on with Me Too and Time's Up and what we've seen up here with Mr. Brown at Queen's Park. I'm wondering, does that have an effect on the political side of things, or even not necessarily on the political side of things, but in terms of the effort for equality, that we've had this huge explosion in terms of taking the all boys club and really blowing it out and turning the lights on there and exposing exposing all that ugliness. Trump certainly takes some responsibility for that too. What kind of effect has that been having, do you think? Whether that's something you're seeing, in the group or with the campaign coming up, or rather just generally as women who are observing politics.
Well, recently I went to a campaign school in Kitchener-Waterloo, and there were, I think, 160 women, which is the greatest number they've ever had. I do think that what's happening has given a lot of women the courage to stand up and say, something has to change, and I have to be part of that change. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I think, a lot of us have experienced workplaces where, maybe inappropriate stuff has gone on. And we may have thought, well, it's just, an anomaly. It's just this work. Right. And I think what's really happening now is people are really getting a sense of how pervasive this problem is. So I think, the good that will come out of this, I hope, is that, people will know that this is a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. And, we can't be quiet anymore. We've got to talk about it. What women politicians are often told when they're trolled by people on the internet is just ignore them, don't respond. I'm not sure that works, actually, because it doesn't really stop them.
Right.
So, I don't know what the answer is, but I think the rest of us, if it's not happening to us, but we see it happening, we need to speak up.
Right. That's an interesting conundrum that I think women candidates are painted into, because it's almost like you feed them if you don't respond, you feed them if you do respond, and so what is it you're supposed to do?
Yeah.
This is, I think, especially difficult for women in the higher office. I mean, I think there are people in town here who still have, the thing about Karen Farbridge being mayor. They still mention her as, I guess, the root of all evil that has befallen the city. You see things on the internet about Kathleen Wynne or Hillary Clinton, and I think a lot of us can't imagine what it'd be like to have to respond to that.
Yeah. It takes a huge personal toll.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm leaning into here is, by encouraging women to run, you're also kind of saying to them, you know, we're going to make you, I don't want to say make you a target, but I will say make you a target, mm-hmm. that there are going to be people who are just going to be fundamentally against you as a woman running for office.
Yes.
And we, sounds like we don't have a good answer about how we, and maybe the campaign school will get into this, but in terms of how you handle that.
Well, I think it's something we have to figure out. But I think one of the goals of the campaign school is to surround these women with supporters, to say, mm-hmm. you will not stand alone if you mm-hmm. do this. You know, we don't all want to run for office. I personally don't want to run for office, but I want to be there backing the women so that they know that they're not alone. And, you know, I mean, in any sort of revolution, you have to go through some of these really tough times to move forward.
Mm. Interesting. Well, let's talk about the campaign school a little. It's going to be Councillor June Hoffland, who mm-hmm. has some experience running and mm-hmm. succeeding in running for office. Mm-hmm. What kind of things are people going to be involved in, and what kind of activities right. are there going to be there?
Yeah, so the way we've set it up is we wanted to give people sort of the nuts and bolts of how do you run for office, because mm-hmm. That's actually what we heard from women who said, well, I might be interested in running, but I don't know what I need to know in order to run. I don't know if I'm qualified. So we thought, well, that's what we need to address with them at the campaign school. So we're going to have the city clerk is going to go through all the legalities, you know, how do you file your nomination papers, you know, what are the rules around fundraising and so on. And then we're going to have a number of current and former councillors who will help people develop a campaign strategy, a communications plan to sort of talk about why they're running so that their messaging is really clear. And at the end of the day, we're going to just open it up so they can ask any question of that they still feel that they need an answer to.
Mm-hmm. And then in the second hour, what do you hope that people are going to leave with? Is it just about creating a space to create that awareness? Are you hoping that people are going to be, you know, filling out their papers at the end of it, or?
Some of both. We know that not everyone who comes is ready to run, so they might not run this time, but mm-hmm. they might run in the future. We've been encouraging some young women to come who say, yeah, I'm not ready, but, mm-hmm. you know, I want to know more about this. So for sure, we do hope that, we know we've already heard from some of the women who are coming that they are actually planning to run.
Mm-hmm.
We also hope that they'll have made networks and connections with people so that after they leave, if they're wondering about something, they have somebody they can get in touch with to talk about it, to ask those questions, and keep them motivated.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of keeping motivated, too, is the group going to be doing anything after this? Is this going to be an active campaign to get people involved, or is, you know, what's going to happen after Saturday?
We haven't planned.
Haven't planned that far ahead.
but I do think that there will be a next step. We're hoping that that will kind of come out of the day.
Mm.
We're planning the sessions so that they're small group and they're going to be very interactive. So there'll be lots of discussion with the people who are participating. And so what we hope to be able to do at the end of the day is to figure out, so what else do they need? And so, yeah, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
So one of the things to answer your question is we have a partnership with a professor at Guelph University,
mm-hmm.
and she has opened it up to her political science students to do some research. And what they're trying to find out are, what are the women's issues?
Mm.
And so the intent is to work towards developing almost a checklist that somehow magically can be distributed to households, so that when your local candidate comes, be it male or female, the person, that resident, can ask questions that target women's issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one follow-up thing that is underway.
No, I think that's a great thing, because I think there is still one of the things I try to address is the mystique of City Hall and where its power begins, where its power ends. And that's an interesting approach, though, in terms of what are women's issues locally. Can you enlighten us a bit more, or is that work
done?
Well,
I think Teresa could speak to that a little more depth. Yeah.
Well, yes, our goal really is to start to get counselors to look at the decisions that they're making through a gendered lens. So often people think, oh, well, as long as you treat everyone the same, that's equality and that's all we need to aim for.
Right.
But we know we have a very diverse society, and we know that people have different needs, and so we can't treat everyone the same. So if we just look at things through that lens of everyone gets the same type of service, same level of service, then we miss out on those subtleties of the groups that need something different. And just an example I would say is that during the last budget deliberations, council decided to give the Neighborhood Support Coalition an increase in their funding.
Mm.
However, they decided to take the funds from the Affordable Housing Reserve.
Mm.
So for our group, that's an issue we're concerned with, because we know that in Guelph, like so many communities, women trying to flee violence have a really hard time finding affordable accommodations. So anything that would take away from that is an issue that's going to affect a particular group of people more than another group.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reminder, and one of the things I've been trying to talk about in preparing for this election is that, you know, that we're going to deal with the budget every year. It's and I think that's sort of what a lot of people make decisions about who to vote on. But you know, there's more to life than the budget. Although all roads do lead to the budget, we can certainly lend more air to something like that, to affordable housing. Not just affordable housing, because even affordable housing isn't affordable to some people.
Yes.
I want to dedicate our last few minutes here just talking a bit more broadly, because I think, you know, we've touched on, you know, all the political moment and the social movement moment. A lot of people want to characterize what's going on as a revolutionary moment here, that women are finally casting aside patriarchy. We are having a shift going on here. I think as a man, I hope that is true. But I also know that we do occasionally have these moments where we go, the revolution is here, and then it turns out it's not here. It's another blip on the road to equalization. So I wanted to get the thoughts of two women on this too. Are you sensing that this is a moment, or is this a movement?
I think it's a movement, and I think that it can start to manifest itself in really concrete terms. So let's take the politics that we're talking about. So if we can change the norms of how politics and power play out in day-to-day interactions in the workforce, in the decision-making they make, then I think that's taking a movement and putting it into more concrete terms that's going to enrich all of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so being conscious that we're talking here to a male, I want to say that, you know, as women, we see this movement forward as something that's good for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about wanting to change the environment of politics, we don't see it just as being good for women. We see it as being good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, this man wishes you the best of luck. I think we'll be very interested to see if we get more women on the campaign trail this year. It can only be a good thing. I think it's past time. Boy, was that patronizing. Anyway, Barb Hale and Teresa McKeeman, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Barb Hale and Teresa McKeeman. The campaign school takes place on Saturday, February the 24th, but it is sold out. You can, however, stay up to date on upcoming events and learn more information by visiting gwcampaignschool.com, or you can send them an email at gwcampaignschool@gmail.com. And that is it for the Guelph Politicast this week. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon by going to patreon.com/Guelph Politico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.